This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for Q&A with Layla. And it just comes around so fast. Every week, we do a duet where we answer your questions. You can send those questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. If we select your question, we'll read it on the air, and we'll endeavor to answer your question. For those of you who are new to Q&A with Layla, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is a registered dietitian, and she's also earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition, and she's a certified nutritionist when it comes to New York State certification. So how you doing, Layla?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Very good, very good. I'm preparing for Rosh Hashanah, which is coming up. Yes, coming up this week, of course, and so needs a little time off, a little time worshiping, and you know, this amidst the seasonal transition, it's always kind of a busy time. So, and I
will
also
enjoy that.
Thank you very much, and I also want to offer our listeners a very happy New Year for those of you who are celebrating the Jewish New Year. It's coming up. All right, so we've got lots of questions to tackle. So why don't we go to it right away?
Okay. This one comes from Karen. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Even though my workout routine includes a lot of cardio daily and HIIT, which is high-intensity interval training, about 2 to 3 times a week, my abs still lack a toned and strong look. So I got sold on a Slender Tone ab belt, which uses electrical muscle stimulation, and it claims to strengthen your abs. I wrap it around my belly and turn it up to full power. It feels really cool. But do you think it's doing anything?
Okay. Yeah, this
and
is really...
And says, P.S. Yeah. No, no, no. She says, P.S., I know you're going to say that you have to watch the diet.
Yeah, right. No, you know, actually, I'm going to surprise her. I'm not going to say that. So let's talk about, you know, first of all, interesting, you know, she is doing something called HIIT, high intensity interval training, which is really kind of a really great concept in exercising. You know, a lot of people, you know, either do exercise where they get on the Stairmaster and they'll go 45 minutes and they'll have an aerobic workout or they'll walk or they'll run or whatever at a steady rate. And then there are people who will pump iron and that, you know, lift weights, whatever, use the universal machine. And then there's something called HIIT, and that utilizes the concept that you can actually shorten your exercise time if you use these intervals that are at near maximal intensity. You really knock yourself out. And according to people who are authorities on exercise training, it's one of the ways where you can actually really increase your performance. And, you know, one of the few ways, because, you know, if you just kind of do the same routine day in and day out, you know, you're going to, it's a good workout and that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but you may not improve your performance. You may not build your muscles. And with
HIIT, it's not going to challenge you after a time. Yeah,
exactly. With HIIT, it's, you know, you're constantly challenging yourself. You know, you may go, whatever, 2 minutes gradually on the treadmill, you know, at a modest pace. You know, where you're within your breath, and then just go 30 seconds, 45 seconds all out. That's sort of the way they do my spin classes now, you know, is that you have these kind of intervals where you just go maximal all-out effort, and then you kind of have these like kind of plateau periods or rest periods, and it, you know, that's supposed to enhance the benefits. So anyway, she's on a good diet. She's exercising like crazy. She can't get those flat abs. So let's talk about that device that she got. The device is it's a passive exercise device. And what it does is it will cause the muscles to contract. I mean, this is actually one of the first experiments in electricity. There was a guy named Galvani. He's an Italian guy. So you ever hear of galvanic current? That is named after that guy. Uh-huh. There's some dude in, you know, the 1800s or the 1700s, figured out that if you applied an electrical current to a frog's leg that had been amputated, the leg would jump.
It would galvanize it.
So there would be a muscle contraction in the leg. So that was like the earliest, exercise belt there, right, that the guy figured out whenever in 1750 or whatever the heck. So does it really enhance muscles? Well, it will give you the sensation that your muscles are contracting, but that doesn't necessarily make muscles.
But electrical stimulation is also used in things like physical therapy.
Yes.
And I think, if I read correctly in Suzanne Summers' book, she uses a device called FaceMaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's any electrical stimulation involved there.
What, is that like a beauty treatment or something? That's like an aesthetic treatment, right? For Suzanne. I guess it is.
It involves some electrical stimulation.
No, what I mean is to make her look good, right? It's not to make her stronger. It's just to make her face look better and to keep So maybe
the facial muscles.
Maybe there's something to that, you know, with the facial muscles, which are kind of small muscles that are relatively weak, and maybe unless you do very strange contortions of your face, you may not utilize those muscles. So maybe there's something to that. I don't know. It's sort of a gimmick. In my opinion, these exercise, passive exercise machines, devices, do absolutely nothing really for muscles. I mean, it feels cool and you get a sensation, but it's not going to make... So here's the problem, and I think you'll agree, Layla, is that genetics and hormones, to some extent, determine what your belly's going to look like. And especially women, women, it's very hard for them to get a flat belly because guess what? You don't have a lot of testosterone. And testosterone is what gives you that amazing muscle definition of these incredible athletes. And oh, by the way, there are some women who have very little subcutaneous fat, not just because of diet. It's not even a merit system. It's racial. It's hereditary to some extent. Sometimes I go to the gym and I see these women working out in the gym and I go, oh, my God, I wish I had muscle tone like them. And I'm a guy. They just have they look like those anatomical models, without the skin. You know, you see like the muscles, the sinews, the perfect biceps, triceps, ab definition, all that stuff. But I think to some extent that's hard work and it's a merit system, but to some extent it's acquired. And estrogen tends to put subcutaneous fat over your muscles. And, all you need to do is, if you want an idea of what, the womanly ideal is, over the ages, go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art or go to your local museum where there's like classical figures and you'll see what they thought about in the, the Renaissance.
Curvy belly. Kind of like a curvy belly,
And that was thought to be the ultimate expression of female beauty. And we've changed that. I mean, we've really sort of masculinized, in a way, the way that women are supposed to look. And, that's an elusive ideal for some women. It's very hard to get there.
Yeah, it can be. However, diet does help.
And it can.
We're not certain yet that Karen is on a great diet because she mentions in her PS that she knows we're going to talk about diet. You could do the best exercise in the world, but if you're going to keep yourself in fat storage mode, if you're a little insulin resistant, especially after a certain age when it becomes a little more difficult, that doesn't work in your favor, as we know.
Right. Yeah, she may be one of these gym rat type people who spend an awful lot of time exercising and then they carbo load. And that ultimately that's self-defeating because...
They go get a smoothie.
Yeah.
They go
get
a smoothie or they drink a muscle milk or something.
Yeah. And, it's like really highly... It's natural and it's quote healthy, but it's sugary, and that may cause them to maintain the pound. So I've worked with athletes who were just tremendous athletes, and because they carbo loaded, they were carrying 5, 8, 10, 12 pounds of extra weight, and we got them on a lower carb diet. They lost all that weight, and their exercise performance went through the roof, and they looked really more awesome too. Because I see sometimes exercisers, and they got a little bit of a jelly roll around the midsection. What's up with that?
They're doing a ton of exercise. The bodybuilders who are kind of thick or dense. I have no better way to describe. Yeah, it's not just muscle, but they're just kind of thick and dense.
But there's a very elusive ideal that we have of what people should look like. I mean, I even look at movies from the 1920s and 30s, where you had Tarzan, you had Hercules, you had Ben-Hur, and those guys, they were strong and athletic, Errol Flynn and, these various heroes, but they were nowhere like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And those guys got there hey, they got there with anabolic steroids. That was the way that they got that body look. Also, with very specialized training techniques that are more modern training regimens that they didn't have available because they didn't have the machines, the technology, and the knowledge back then. And by the way, you know, there's nothing wrong with just overall fitness without that, you know, perfectly defined body. I mean, I think people are too much into the aesthetic and more, I think they should be more into the functionality.
I think it's more prevalent in this country than anywhere else. I recall just briefly, we have a patient from France in particular, and we were discussing her diet. We cleaned it up when we were discussing exercise. She was already slender and thin, as French women are, and lovely and all of that. And she did not want toned arms. She was adamant about, no, I don't want Michelle Obama arms.
Interesting. Interesting.
The comment was just interesting. But, you know, she does not find that look appealing.
Right.
So
it's the skinny bitch look, or the, you know, the sinewy look. You know, it's like a cannibal would not get any satisfaction from a person eating a person like that. There's just nothing but, you know, muscles and sinew, and, you know, that's it. All right. So enough said on that subject, I think. So let's move on to our next question, please.
Yeah. Okay. This one comes from Lori. She asks, I currently take Jigsaw Magnesium, 500 milligrams a day, and I would like to add magnesium taurate, 125 milligrams a day. She does take Acifex daily for reflux. She wants to know, does the Jigsaw Magnesium work the same way on AFib as magnesium taurate will?
Okay.
Or is this combination just too much? What's your opinion about that?
Okay, I mean, it's kind of a technical question. I think maybe what we might start out with is let's distinguish among these different types of magnesium. So maybe you could take it away because you're pretty expert on that stuff. You deal with patients on that question, Taylor.
Yeah, different types of magnesium. The Jigsaw brand magnesium, which is magnesium malate, is probably the most bioavailable, the less likely to cause any diarrhea. Beyond that, there's magnesium taurate, which is great for heart vascular function, blood pressure, things like mitral valve prolapse, and yes, I would agree, AFib as well, the taurate form of magnesium.
Yeah, because taurine itself is an antiarrhythmic. It's an amino acid,
yes.
L-taurine, so you get the benefits of the magnesium, the benefits of the taurine together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's magnesium glycinate, which is particularly good for muscle cramping. And magnesium citrate, which is primarily for constipation, mm-hmm. also for the prevention of kidney stones.
Right, absolutely.
And some people do better with magnesium citrate for muscle cramps as well, or a combination of the citrate and glycinate, I find.
And what's our take on magnesium oxide, one of the most common types of magnesium that's in supplements?
That will cause diarrhea. It's the least bioavailable.
Mm-hmm.
It absorbs the most water in the colon and will cause diarrhea, so that's the least bioavailable. If you're very, very constipated, take some magnesium oxide. That'll solve the problem.
Or even magnesium sulfate, which is Epsom salts. That's actually typically used as a laxative.
Mm-hmm.
But magnesium oxide is, unfortunately, it's cheap and readily available, and it's in many cheap multis, and we really don't like it. So we favor the more bioavailable forms of magnesium. It's about absorption. We find a lot of people who take oral magnesium, when we do sensitive blood tests, we see that they don't absorb the magnesium. And magnesium is hard to absorb. Some people will, because of their metabolism or because of stress on their body or malabsorption, they will have difficulty absorbing magnesium. Now, I notice you were talking about this person being on an acid-blocking medication. Acifex.
So she's going to need more. She's going to need more magnesium because any acid-blocking medication is going to keep her minerals from being absorbed.
Right. It's notorious for doing that.
Magnesium. Yeah, it's probably good. But what do you think about which for AFib, Dr. Hoffman?
Well, I actually think the magnesium taurate is more targeted to that, and the dosage is really key. Mm-hmm. I actually learned this from a colleague of mine, a medical doctor, who himself suffered from atrial fibrillation. And he said, you know, I discovered something really interesting, Ron. You know, we were having dinner, and he said, you know, we give patients magnesium taurate, and we said, well, take one twice daily or maybe two twice daily. He said, for my atrial fibrillation, I had to take six or eight, sometimes 9 or 10 a day to get my atrial fibrillation better controlled, because actually there's not that much magnesium in magnesium taurate. So again, be wary of, it could have a laxative effect at that level for some sensitive individuals. For people who are having kidney failure, you have to avoid excess magnesium. For most people, that will be well tolerated. It turns out that if you take any of these acid blocking medications, the so-called PPIs, these include Acifex, but also Protonix, and what are some of the other ones? Zegarid and Prilosec, Nexium. Prilosec, Nexium. These are the more common brands. They're even available over the counter now. They actually have black box warnings that explicitly warn that patients may become magnesium deficient if they take these medications. So it's like when somebody takes a statin drug, must be on CoQ10 or ubiquinol. If you take an acid blocker, you must be on some sort of magnesium supplement. I don't care. You just always need that.
Yeah. She does have another follow-up question. Is it safe taking a product where the taurine is from China?
Okay, so that's a whole ball of wax there.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that if we were to... it's a little bit like those commercials about plastic. They say, they do commercials sometimes. I don't know if you've seen the commercial where they say, plastic has really revolutionized our lives. If we didn't have plastic, then they show everything disappearing, like everything, there's no longer anything left. I mean, there may be a few metal objects and a few wood objects, but there's so much plastic that there's, the chair that the person's sitting in, it would fall down. They wouldn't be able to write with anything. They wouldn't have it. So the point being is that so many supplements come from China. China is where a lot of things come from. A lot of our foods, a lot of our consumer products.
Oh yeah.
China is like the great manufacturing center of the world where there's cheap labor, and unfortunately there are a wide gamut of manufacturing standards in China. Now that great new iPhone 6 that many of you just got, or your Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy
phone. The
one
that's bending in your pocket.
Right. The parts are made in China. I mean, let's face it. So, and there's probably pretty decent quality control, because I haven't seen, a lot of phones exploding, and, so far so good. So there is, when it comes to supplements, there really are concerns about the quality of supplements made in China, but that doesn't mean that all of them are bad. It just means that we should check the sources, that manufacturers need to be responsible for looking at their production chain and the provenance of some of the ingredients that they use. And
the nutraceutical, the integrity of the nutraceutical company who's producing the
who's
product.
Who's vouching for it.
They're using quality ingredients.
Yes. They have a reputation to defend. Look, small fly-by-night companies are here today and gone tomorrow. They can just, disappear and resurrect under a new name, and maybe they keep their money offshore, and they can play hide-and-seek with the regulators, and, nobody knows where to find them if they need to sue them. But big companies, they have high visibility. They don't want disasters on their hands. They don't want to tarnish their reputation or invite lawsuits. Regulatory action lawsuits. So they, I think, will undertake the due diligence that's necessary. Now, occasionally, problems occur. We had a tryptophan problem. That product came from Japan many years ago. This is, I think, the late 1980s, and it actually caused harm before it was discovered that the tryptophan manufactured in Japan was faulty, and it was harmful. But we haven't had too many of these types of problems. And, I'm thinking, the reality is that we're going to get a lot of our ingredients from China.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Lori, for your question. We have another one here from Mary.
Yep.
Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, I get a really upset stomach from strontium. However, she has found a compounding pharmacy that will make a topical cream.
Yeah.
Of 680.
By the way, that is very rare that people get an upset stomach from strontium.
I don't hear that too often at all.
And strontium is so much more gentle than the medications that are used for osteoporosis. Those medications actually cause esophageal erosions, ulcerations. They can even promote esophageal cancer, according to some studies. So, generally strontium pretty well tolerated. But hey, there are sensitive people out there.
Yeah. She wants to know, because the pharmacist doesn't know, how much is absorbed through the skin. Are there routine blood tests to look at strontium before and after?
No. The answer is nobody knows. That's not the right delivery system for strontium. We don't even know to what extent it is absorbed by the skin. And if it is, maybe just infinitesimal amounts are absorbed, not enough to do anything whatsoever for your bones. So to me, that is like a harebrained idea. I never heard of it. You know, it's like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like if you can't eat a steak, would you apply transdermal filet mignon to your arms to get
that's
the
not
nutrition?
Work very well.
I don't think so.
A suggestion for Mary, if you're getting an upset stomach, you might try taking it with some food, take a lesser amount with a little food, or I don't know.
I actually think under these circumstances, you know, the main idea with strontium is we say, take it on an empty stomach at bedtime because we don't want it to interfere with calcium. Hey, you know something? That's a theory, and you can take it with a food that is not – doesn't have a lot of calcium in it. Maybe take it with a little applesauce or something like that. Doesn't have a lot of calcium that could interfere with the strontium. Who's to say that would spoil the efficacy of the strontium? I don't think that would. So it might be permissible to take it with a little bit of something, you know, that is not, you know, maybe not take it with a glass of milk that's laden with calcium or a piece of cheese.
Yeah.
But, you know, that might be fine. That might help cushion the stomach from any irritation and buffer the effects of the strontium. The strontium is it's pretty pH neutral. It maybe is a tiny bit acidic, but this is a person where what this tells me is that this person's got some digestive problems. She may have gastritis or even an ulcer, and that needs to be checked out. And maybe some work needs to be done to soothe her esophagus or soothe her stomach, because it's a sign of trouble that she can't tolerate a pretty neutral tablet like that.
Right. At the very least, Mary, take some DGL, but it is a good idea to get it checked out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, so this is a good inflection point for us to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two segments, and let's stipulate this is part one. And coming up, we'll answer more of your questions. Layla, give us a little preview of what we will talk about in part two of today's Q&A with Layla.
Dr. Hoffman, what is your opinion of root canal? That's coming up.
All right. So stay tuned. Yeah. Part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back.